Hello, Podnutsians. Welcome to DDG, episode 6. We're going to do a follow-up from our last show. Last show was about my hardware stack and podcast recording and production. We're going to go into the software side of the deal. But first, I'm going to go over some emails. I got a couple emails here. First one is from Lucas, and he just said, hello, I just ordered 10 of those 2-packs of USB LED lights you mentioned on the latest episode of DDG. While I don't necessarily have a studio to light, I can see finding several places that these will come in handy, and they are cheap too. Thanks for the suggestion. I can tell you another place where I put one of these little thumb drive sized 3 LED lights that are insanely bright. In my youngest son's room, he still wants the bathroom light on. He keeps saying he's afraid of dark, where I think he just likes seeing the light. I don't think it's a fear thing. But I took a USB phone charger that had the USB plug on the bottom of it. And what I did was I faced one of these towards the wall, plugged it in. So now it's like a night light. And I don't know about you guys, most of the night lights that I bought for my oldest son when he was young, I really got upset at how frequently the bulbs went out, and I had to go to the store and purchase little tiny screw-in lights, and it just made me really upset. I really do like this light. It's very easy that when after hours, I just walk up, unplug it from the wall when he's asleep, and we don't have to worry about it. So it's only lit a couple hours a night, and I know it's using almost no electricity at all. These are a great little thing to have. I highly encourage people to order a couple of these. Keep them around the house. I guarantee you, you will find a use case for them, whether it's in your shed, in your garage, a hallway light, a night light under the kitchen counter light, all kinds of little use cases for it. And I want to thank Lucas for sending the email. The second email we have is from Jeff Owens, a longtime Podnut supporter, really good guy, great kid in Ellis Owens, now a married man, not a kid, a man with kids. So he is formerly now a father, an adult, and a man, and I really want him to come to another conference just because I had such a fun time talking with him. Unbelievably nice guy. And I'll just say the apple didn't fall far from the tree, because Jeff is a really, really nice guy. He said, hey, Dor, are you still using Q Tractor? How about you explain the VM that we used to use and how you use Q Tractor for your audio editing? That is going to be this episode, and I do plan on doing a YouTube video, partially, I think, as a friend of the network, Run Jump Stomp, Bill. If you just Google search Run Jump Stomp, he has Twitch channels, YouTube channels, podcast, Twitter, all kinds of stuff. Really nice guy, really smart guy, doing really quality podcasting and content as far as I'm concerned. I am a Patreon of his. Talks about gaming, and especially Nintendo Switch, which I do have, and I really enjoy hearing his opinions on the hardware, the software, the company, and just games in general. But he put a video up with his audio editing techniques, and he uses Audacity for everything. And I gotta post a video showing him how he can extremely expedite his editing technique and make it much easier and quicker. I'm amazed at the amount of content he does with how long it takes him to edit each show. I would say that is dedication. So that is coming up, and hopefully a video soon. I believe that was it for all of the emails. Please do not forget, if you want to send an email in, just send it to ddg@podnuts.com. And I highly encourage you to send emails in. It forces me to read and speak, which I'm not great at, and I really would like more practice at it. I'm also going to take a couple minutes to thank some of the Patreons that are supporting us at patreon.com/podnuts. I'm going to go from the newest back until I'm positive I'm duplicating people. The latest one we have Donald doing a $5 a month pledge. Thank you extremely, Donald. You're literally doing the work of multiple people. Thank you very much. Then we have Andre, Jesse, and Jordan all doing a dollar a month. Thank you very much, guys. Jesse Beach is one of the guys who's been emailing Android App Addicts for, I believe, years. He almost won a phone from us. I know he was right there in the running, and I want to thank him for all his support throughout the years. We then have Ian doing $2 a month. Before that, we have Black Death, a guy I met up in Cambridge, Massachusetts back in February. Really, really nice guy, really smart guy. I'm a little bit jealous that he gets to work at what I like to consider one of the premier companies in this country today. And he is doing $5 a month as well. And I cannot thank you, Black Death. He's another guy who's been around the Podnuts Network for years, always in like IRC and stuff, willing to help people out. Then we have Abe. Abe did a dollar each month. I met him in the Discord chat for the Switchcast. Really, really good podcast. Really nice guys, KC and JV, who apparently believe in initials only. Now that I stopped and think about it, I met Abe and a bunch of really nice guys in that chat. I really wish I had more time to hang out in non-Podnuts chats, but I'm only there now when time extremely permits. But he was one of the guys who definitely unbelievably cool, unbelievably nice. Everybody in that Discord chat was there to help have fun, share information about everything that we learned. Then before that, we have Paul. Paul did $1 a month. He is another extremely long-time supporter. This is the guy who did help me with show notes for Linux for the Rest of Us for, I believe, at least 3 years. The amount of work he did for the network is the kind of thing I really cannot understate. He helped a hell of a lot. Before that, we have John doing $1 a month. John's another guy who constantly pings me about Android apps and Android hardware. Really nice guy. He, to me, is like the classic example of the working man. He isn't into rumors. He doesn't have a $80,000 car. He's a normal guy who likes to sit down and do normal things. And to be honest, that's the kind of person I want listening to this type of content. Normal people. I don't expect to get rich kids. I don't expect to get elites. I don't want, you know, any of them people really, you know, being here. I really like the common man. Granted, we have doctors and we have other people, and they're nice to have around. They're great to have around, in fact. But John's the guy I feel like I can really communicate with, and he understands me, and I understand him. Then before that, we have Mark doing $3 a month. Then we have Matthew doing $1 a month. Matthew is also contributing to the Android App Addicts Patreon, and I believe he was the very first Patreon on Android App Addict. So he has officially supported us through the Patreon system longer than anybody, and it's very safe to say more than anybody else. So thank you very much, Matthew. Before that, we have a business here, Cormac Crosshaven Computers, doing $2 a month. Thank you very much, sir, and I really hope you get value out of this network in all it shows. Then before that, we have Rafi doing $1, and I believe it's Diver doing $3 a month. We've had a couple emails going back and forth. I really do thank you. Thank you. Before that, we have Steven doing $1 a month. Steven G is a really another long time Podnuts guy. Sent many, many emails. If I search my inbox for him, I'm going to see a lot of good stuff going back and forth. Then we have Lucas, guy who sent me the very first email here for this show, doing $1 a month. And then we have Joshua up in Canada doing $1 a month. Josh, unbelievably cool guy. Between me and you guys, him alone is enough to make me want to go to Linux Fest Northwest next year. So I have to go, because not only do I get to see him, but I get to see guys like Martin Bando, Cody Cooper, Aaron Turnbull, Chuck, and just more and more and more and more guys that too many to mention, to be honest. And that's all the new Patreon people we have since the last show. So I definitely want to thank you guys. Okay, now on to the hardware stack. And I'm going to do this as fast as I can, but I will tell you, I have a very long chain of software that I use. And I'm going to start with what I use to do the shows live, software speaking. And here's the thing. There is not one solution. And that's the one thing I really want to impress the people. All of my hardware, all of my software is directly for my way of doing things and my types of shows and the way that the network is. It all fits in its place. You, if you start your own podcast, you're going to probably use different sets of hardware, different configurations of hardware, and the same goes with the software. The first thing I'll say is, depending on the show, I either do local double-ended recordings. That's the old way of doing it. That's the way I put it, the old way of doing it. Where each person on the show loads up Audacity on their desktop and hits record. Now, the reason for that is, A, if I record everyone's audio, I'm going to have lag in between people talking. Number one. Number two, if I have more than a couple people on a show, they're going to be put down on one single track. So hypothetically, I'm host one. Hypothetically, host two, three, and four will be on the same track. And let's say host three has a car alarm going off at, you know, outside their house. Well, that audio is then going to pollute the other two people on the show. So when you do the double-ended recording, it's much easier to clean noise out of a file without damaging the other people's audio, because when you clean audio, you are also damaging it slightly. And this is very realistic. If you take something, spray it on, and then rub it off, why, yes, you are cleaning it, but technically you're also taking off a very small layer of the top. That's just the way it is with audio editing. Now, from my Linux Basic days, which now I believe is about 8 years old. I believe it was eight years ago, if not more. The one thing I learned was, when you have a large group of people, it's really difficult to do double-ended recording, because inevitably, with each host on the show, you have a greater chance of catastrophic failure in either their power going out, their computer crashing, the software crashing, recording the wrong mic, and so on and so on and so on. So every host you add to a show, it becomes more dangerous to do the double-ended recording. Now, even when I do shows with myself or somebody else, I still do double recording. And what I mean is, while I'm recording my local audio and the other host might be doing their own audio, I'm also simultaneously streaming it to services like YouTube, and I'm having them also record it. Now, the disadvantage is, if one of us have a catastrophic failure and I have to use that backup, the audio is not going to be as good. But I will much rather have audio that is not as good versus going back to the other host and saying, hey, you know, we did that show the other night, and yeah, it did turn out really good, didn't it? Well, do you think we can do it again? That's the number one worst thing you can say to anybody. Now, I'll also say, if we have a guest on the show, I almost can't expect the guest to download software, configure software, record software, save out the audio right, and send me the file. That's putting a lot of work on them. Okay, so when there's more people on the show, or I need to be able to control everything from my end, I use a audio only software called Mumble. Mumble is completely open free software. There's plenty of services out there where, if you want to pay as little as like $2 a month, and even less, I guarantee you less, you can get your own Mumble server and basically control it like it's yours. The big advantage to using Mumble is, it adheres like an old technical theory, as I put it. it is a pain to get set up for a lot of people. They have to sit there and they have to plug away at it and they have to reconfigure and they have to test and they have to, and then they finally get it up and running. But the beauty is typically once you get that piece of software up and running, it just works and it just works really good. On Linux Basics, I believe we had upwards of 15 people sometimes on one show, and yet the audio turned out good. Well, here's the trick to using Mumble versus just something like Skype or Google Hangouts or Jitsi Meet. With Mumble, what I insist every host does is they turn on a feature called Push to Talk. Push to Talk means they have to push a key on their keyboard for their microphone to be open, which is great when you have a lot of people because that means if they sneeze, if they cough, if their car alarm goes off, for instance, then there's no noise whatsoever coming through their mic. It makes editing so much easier. Okay. The downside is they have to push their button to talk. But here's how you can turn it. Here's how you can be a politician like. You can turn it into an advantage. Okay. What I have all the hosts do is I tell them when they want to talk, hit the push to talk button and wait just a split second and look at the screen and see if other people want to talk. Because if the last thing you want is people talking over one another, and the more you have, the more likely that's going to happen. So when the host adhere to that, the conversation goes much better. I mean, obsessively better. And the big advantage is then people are waiting just a little bit longer. Even though it's only a split second, they're waiting just a little bit longer, which means they have more time to gather their thoughts, which means typically when they say something, it sounds better because it is literally more thought out. Okay. Now, here's one of the tricks with Mumble. You can turn on a thing called double push, and I use that quite frequently, which means when I know I'm going to say more than one or two words, I don't hit the push to talk button and hold it down, but I double tap it, and then the mic stays open until I tap that button again, which means I can start to talk, I can still browse the web, I can still do other things. One of the key things is you have to make your push to talk button a key you normally do not press. Like the worst thing you can do is make it your space bar, because then every time you're typing and you hit space, it's going to open up the mic. So never make it that. The other advantage to using Mumble is you can go in and you can individually change your audio quality. So if I have somebody on a really bad connection, they can go in and they can turn their quality down, which will mean less lag, less dropouts, less sounding like the Cylon. Now, granted, their audio won't be as good, but at least it will be solid and in one piece. So right now on the Maker Show, for instance, we are using Mumble because we have 7 people on the show. The downside is there's no video. So even if we want to do YouTube stuff, it's going to have to be a little bit different. But we are going to continue to use Mumble for the foreseeable future. Okay, now that's just recording the software. Okay, after that, the main piece of software I use in live podcasting is a piece of software called OBS, Open Broadcast Software. And yes, all the notes to everything I'm talking about, all of the links will be in the notes for everything I'm talking about. OBS is essentially a successor, a spiritual successor to an old piece of software called Webcam Studio. Webcam Studio was by far the most advanced webcam and camera switching software, almost TV studio-ish, that was on Linux for years. Well, it was written in Java, which meant it was bloaty, it was heavy, it was slow, it required lots of RAM. So when you got into more higher-end stuff, it wouldn't perform as good. And eventually, it just stopped getting updated. Well, OBS picked up it and started working on it. I believe now it's technically written in C++ throughout. It runs on every operating system, Windows, Mac, and Linux. It has plug-in architectures. It has the ability to stream to abundant sources, not just YouTube. You can stream to YouTube or to Twitch or to like at least 4 or 5 other ones I've never heard of. Or you can do local desktop recording, which means when you upload that, you're going to have fantastic quality with the video. You also have the ability to do scene switching. So you can have one scene where it's just the people talking, And then you can have a different scene where you're showing a web page or a video or a game or a image, and you can have the people chatting down in the corner. A lot of kids want to be on YouTube, and I'm going to tell you right now, little doubt in my mind, in the last year, the number one most used piece of software for people on YouTube, especially doing stuff like playthroughs on games, they're using OBS. OBS is fantastic software. It isn't perfect. Nothing is perfect, but it is fantastic software. Okay. Next piece of software I really was looking to upgrade, but I've been saying that now for well over a year, so I might not be upgrading it. And it's called OwnCloud. Think of OwnCloud like Dropbox, because that's essentially what it is. I have my own OwnCloud server here running in my house on a mini computer, size of a Raspberry Pi, but it has a genuine SATA port, and I have a, I believe, 250 gig SSD hanging off of it, and it is running this cloud-enabled file synchronizing software. The real reason I initially liked OwnCloud was I could give anybody a couple links, a username and password, set up their username password in the system. They can download an application just like Dropbox. And when they load it up, they have to put in my URL of my server, their username, their password, and then they're synced into my server. So when people do the double-ended recording and they locally record using Audacity, all they have to do is either make the default save path or export path for that audio into the OwnCloud server folder, or they just have to move it after the fact. And it then instantly starts to sync their file to my server. So I don't have to worry about people uploading files. I don't have to go to Amazon Web Cloud storage for this host, Dropbox for this other host, Google Drive for this other host, OneNote for this other host, and just be all around the place. I can have them just put it in one place. And then the beauty of it is I can install that same application on any of my devices, and then I can sync the entire contents of everybody's shows to multiple computers instantaneously. Okay, I don't have to do any work, and anytime somebody uploads a file, it is automatically on three of my computers, and I have an rsync task in the background pushing it up to Google Drive. So even if something catastrophic happens at my house, as long as a little bit of time passed after a show, I'm going to have all of the show raw files up on my Google Drive and be able to edit the show like nothing happened. And that's one of the biggest things. Security, when you get those files, you never want to ask somebody, upload it again, can you export it again, something happened, I can't find it, where's it at? It just takes a lot of worrying out of the flow. Okay, now we're going to get into the actual editing of the audio. And I will say this, one of the old adages holds very true, and that is if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Don't try to argue with me, because you know I'm right. That's just the way it is. Okay, so I try to use the right tool for the right job, which unfortunately means I use multiple pieces of software, and that's because I want to expedite the post-processing, the post-production, to be as quick as possible. I don't believe in just recording something and posting it to the internet and calling it a podcast, because it typically sounds horrible. It doesn't sound consistent from show to show, from series to the series, or from guest to guest, or from host to host. So I always do some amount of post-processing. And to be quite honest, I believe I do just as much as other people. It's just I have the workflow down to where I literally can post-produce a two-hour podcast in less than 20 minutes. And it's the equivalent to 2 hours worth of work. You got to just hear me out, okay? The number one first tool I use is VirtualBox. Didn't think I was going to say that now, did you? VirtualBox is a virtual operating system tool. And for the people that don't know, what that means is I boot up an application, and then inside of that application, I have a different operating system, completely different than I have on my computer. Okay. And there's two reasons to do this. One, if you have a lot of RAM, virtual machines love RAM. You'll get good performance out of a VM if you have a good amount of RAM. On this is my laptop. This is the laptop that hasn't been produced for over 6 years, not new, not blazing fast, and it has 16 gigs of RAM. So it is okay with a VM. The other reason I use a VM is that it is its own entity. If there's special configuration I need in the OS, what happens if I have to reload my OS on my computer because something happened? Then I have to completely rebuild my entire editing stack as well, and I do not want to ever do that. Okay. And the third thing, I went into my virtual OS and I disabled every single update, every application update, every OS update, every security update. And the reason I did is I am never using that virtual machine for anything except audio editing. So I'm not browsing the web on it. I'm not opening up PDFs. I'm not using LibreOffice. I'm not using any of those things, just my audio editing software. So the likelihood of it being infected or exploited, I think, is unbelievably low. Okay. Now, the OS I use in the virtual machine is an older Debian distro called Tango Studio. Now, it has been updated. The couple reasons I went with Tango Studio is it has what's called a real-time kernel. The audio software I use is called QTractor, and it needs this thing installed called Jack, and Jack needs a real-time kernel. On the normal, air quotes, Linux distribution, if you try to install my audio editing application, it will not work because normal Linux desktops use Pulse Audio or ALSA, but I need Jack. So I do it in a VM. The other reason I do it in a VM is because Jack is guaranteed to work with my hardware because it's in a VM. All of the hardware it's interfacing with is virtualized. So it's standardized, lowest common denominator, like it always works. I have nothing to worry about. Okay. So I record my shows. I collect it with OwnCloud. I then launch my VM. I pull the shows into the VM. And the very first thing I do is I load Audacity. This is why I say Audacity is because if you have a hammer, you think everything's a nail. Well, I try to make sure I use the software that's best suited for the task. Audacity does, in my humble opinion, when you have a lot of the plugins loaded, phenomenal things like noise cancellation really well. And I like the truncate silence, and I like the Dyson compressor in it. So the first thing I do is I take everyone's files, and I typically don't have to do this for my audio because I have the extra hardware, but I have to do it for most of the other guests. I open up their audio in Audacity. I find a part where they're not talking. I highlight the audio. I go to Effect, Noise Cancel, Get Sample, Select All, Effects, Noise Cancel, and OK. And what it does is it takes a sample of that place where they're not talking and you hear the background noise, and it removes that specific range of sound from the entire audio track. The downside is when you do that, you are damaging that host, voice. You're damaging their audio. I try to encourage everyone to have minimum background noise. And for the most part, it doesn't really affect their voice too bad, but it does affect their voice. But the good thing is, week to week to week, they have the same background noise going on. So week to week to week, they sound the same to the listener, even though it might not be an accurate representation of their voice, which I think is much less jarring to the listener. If every week they have different background noise, every week they change their settings where they record, every week they change their mic and how they handle their mic, then every week they would sound different, and that is bad. So I encourage them to always be in the same place, always have the same background noise, always have the mic in the same place, and always talk in the same tone. And everyone's really good at that. Okay. Now that's a quicker task because I'm in a VM with 16 gigs of RAM, even with an hour's worth of audio to noise cancel, is at the most 2 or 3 minutes. And then I basically just noise cancel it. I look if there's any extreme peaks and valleys in the audio waveform. If there's extreme peaks, it's typically a lip smack or something like that, or a laugh. And then I go in and manually de-amplify those places, but that's typically only one or two little places each file, and that at the most takes 30 seconds to do. Okay, once I do that, I then export the audio file, even if it's a 2-hour audio file. To export the file only takes a couple minutes, maybe again 3 or 5 minutes. Okay, once I do that to everyone's audio, I then open up QTractor. Now, here's the biggest thing. Audacity is what's called a destructive editor, and QTractor is a non-destructive, I believe the correct term is non-linear editor, but I might be wrong about that last part. It might be a linear editor. Here's what that really means to the layman. Destructive editor means, and here's how you know when you're using one, when you select a range of audio and you tell it to do something, whether it be compress, fade in, fade out, or whatever, and you see a progress bar, that is a destructive editor. It is actually at that point in time going into the temporary files that it has loaded for this audio, and it actually changes the audio, which means every time you do something, it's going to take time. And the bigger of a thing you do, like when I highlight the entire audio track and I hit compress using the Dyson compressor, it can take 5 minutes because it's a destructive editor. Okay. QTractor is a non-destructive editor, which means I can select anything I want, apply any EQ, any compression, any gating, any amplifying, anything, and it's instantaneous, and I can hit play and I can hear the change right then and there because it's basically done in layers, essentially in RAM is the way I put it. And all of these changes you make aren't written to the file until you export or save. So even with the 2-hour file, to do an export at the most is maybe 7 minutes. It isn't too bad. Most of the shows are about an hour, so it's around 3 to 5 minutes at worst. Now, and here's the reason why I use QTractor. I do this every week for every show. Okay, if you at work have to submit something every single week, and it's not just words, but there's actually form in that document, there's actually tables, there's actually bullet points, or there's columns, and there's fields, and this is bold, and this is underlined, and this is bigger font, and this is smaller font, and all these different things in this Word doc, do you really want to create that Word doc from scratch every week? If your answer is yes, then use Audacity, because that's essentially what you're doing when you use it. There is no real templating system in that application. Now, there are workarounds where you can kind of do templating things, but it really isn't the same thing. With QTractor, I have a template for every show that already has the intro music, already has the intro sound, already has last week's tracks in it, already has the EQing done for each individual track, already has the compression for each individual track, already does the gating for each individual track. It does one or two more things for each individual track, and they're already preset. When I delete one person's audio from last week and add their audio from this week, I'm not deleting the track, just the audio in the track. So all the settings I put in for each host stays forever until I go in and change it. So once I get something dialed in where I think it's good, I never have to touch it again. Okay. And then all I got to do is basically bring in the people's files. We usually time our recording when we use Audacity, to where I literally do a countdown and say 3, 2, 1, record. And then we all record at the same time. So when I line up everyone's files, the audio also lines up. All I got to do is go find where the show actually starts, clip everything before that, drag it to the right where I want it to be, go to the end of the file, and because it's already a template, I also have the post show ad, network ad. It's already right there to go. I just swap it out with a different ad, and I just take the ending music and fade it out right there. And that takes literally 2 or 3 minutes to do what I just said. It is not long whatsoever. Now with Mumble, here's the real reason I use Mumble for, here's another reason why I use Mumble when there's lots of people in the show. When I record Mumble, I have somebody else also do it just in case something goes wrong on my end. But in Mumble, when I hit record, I have a couple options. One of them, I can change it to a file type or a file format of OGG. OGG is truly one of the most competitive audio formats for quality and size. The ratio of quality to size is fantastic. It's not a big file, and you get really good audio quality. The other reason is I can do what's called a multi-track recording, which means if I have 7 people on the show, I have 7 unique files. And when I hit record, they all start at exactly the same time. Here's the other reason I love that piece of software. Hypothetically, we do an hour and a half show, and somebody doesn't join until 40 minutes into the show. So now you think when I go to edit the files, I'm going to have one file that doesn't line up with the beginning because he wasn't there for the first 40 minutes. Well, if you think that, you're wrong. And that's another reason why Mumble's fantastic. If it takes 40 minutes for somebody to join, Mumble will put 40 minutes of complete silence at the beginning of that person's track. So they will instinctively, naturally, just perfectly line up with no questions asked. Unbelievably easy. The only catch with Mumble, and you got to be sure, is if someone talks for an extensive period of time, and it depends on the server, it depends on the RAM in the server, and it depends on the quality of the audio coming into it. They're all things that make it change, I believe. If someone talks for over like 5 minutes straight without a single pause in their open mic, it can sometimes cause the time shift to happen to where if you're not paying a attention at the editing process, you might lose a second of time in their file somewhere. And then after that point in time in the show, other people will start to overlap in their talking. For the most part, that doesn't happen, but it's very easy to identify, especially when everyone on the show is patient, they don't talk over one another, and you can then very clearly see each person's audio file and their waves forms, and you can easily go towards the end of the show and just see nobody is colliding. We're good. It didn't happen on this show. And if it does happen, it's typically just you zoom out as far as you can. You find the one track that's colliding with everybody. You find where they talked for a long period of time. And right after that happens is where you have to do the modification. Typically, you have to add just a little bit of time. And that is another thing that only takes a minute or two at the most. Okay, so I have all the tracks lined up. And I have my settings already done. I have my EQ set from the last time. I have my gate set from the last time. I have my compressor from the last time. Here's one of the other big reasons I love using this tool. On the last output track, it's called, I can do another piece of configuration called a hard limiter. A hard limiter means no matter what, even if I screw up and I jack someone's audio through the roof, their audio will not clip. When audio clips, that's where it literally sounds like your speaker's blown and bad things can happen. When I put in this hard limiter, it ensures that I can have really loud audio, but it won't clip and it won't sound horrible. One of the biggest things that every podcaster needs to know is one of the worst things you can do is have low audio on your show, because you have people with all different quality headphones, earbuds, cars, home stereos or whatever, where they can only turn something up so loud and that's it. When you have a podcast and you produce it and it's really loud, the worst thing that happens is once in a while they got to turn it down. And that's fine, because then you know it's going to be at a optimum level that they can hear you. Okay. Now using the hard limiter ensures it's never going to go too loud. So if you play a Podnuts podcast versus other podcasts, it's rare that another show will be louder than us. And honestly, I picked up on this from the Twit Network. All of their podcasts for the longest time was extremely loud, and I didn't understand it until I talked to a couple other podcast people, and they kind of filled me in. That's what was going on. Now, the one thing I will say, the one thing that everyone needs to do with their audio is compress it. And a real quick example description of what compression is. Think of a conversation as peaks and valleys in the audio waveform. The peaks are when they are at their loudest. Their valleys are when they're at their softest. Okay. Well, the other worst thing that can happen in a podcast is one person's loud, one person's quiet. You're going to miss almost half the conversation typically. Or if someone gets a little bit away from their mic or whispers, it'll be really hard to hear. Well, when you compress the audio, what you do is you push the audio towards the middle ground. The valleys come up a little bit, the peaks come down a little bit, and so everything sounds more normalized is the word I use. So that's the other reason why I like Q Tractor. I believe their compression tool on the entire track helps a lot with my audio. Okay, now Q Tractor being one of those obsessively capital F free software things, I believe only wants to export in completely open formats. To me, the most open format that has the highest quality that doesn't take up a terabyte of data when you export it is WAV, W-A-V, the old school, the old school WAV file. Most of the time, the files are pushing a gig to 1.2 gigs for an entire show, and it's a WAV file. Next thing I do when I'm done exporting the file, now that can take, on the largest shows, almost 10 minutes. So that's where most of my time goes. But on the normal show, it's another 3 to 5 minute at most process. Now, when I have the WAV file, I actually open it back up in Audacity. And here's why. I then select the entire show. It has all of the audio, all of the intro music, and everything in everyone's words, all basically on one track. Okay, I then select the entire track, and I go to effects and I do truncate silence. I can't do this earlier in the process because I'm not talking the whole time in a show. I take breaks because somebody else is talking. And if I truncate the silence then, I will never be waiting for someone to talk and we will constantly be talking over one another. So I do it at this step. Also, I believe it seems to be when I do this on a WAV file, I get better, more consistent results. So I load that up. Most of the time it takes anywhere from 3 to 15 minutes off a show. Now some of the more advanced podcast players actually have this as an option. They can automatically remove silent spots, which I think is golden, but I do it so they don't have to. And I do it for the people that don't know about the feature. And I do it for everyone that doesn't have that feature. I honestly believe some people believe it makes the show sound less real. I believe it makes it sound more real. I also believe it gives me the liberty to not say a lot of ums and like my crutch words and just to try to, you know, keep saying stuff while I'm thinking about what to say. I literally just pause, and I tell every host on every show, a pause is not a bad thing. The live people will hear the pause. I don't care about the live people. Even if you're a live listener listening to this now, I don't care. Because at most, your 3% of the downloads or of the people who listen to it, typically you're only 1% of that. So I can't do everything and change everything just for that 1%. So I pause on my podcast actually quite frequently. But when you listen to the end product, you don't hear it. And I don't have to manually go through the file, highlight the silent, delete. Highlight the silence, delete. I just go, select it all, effects, truncate, silence. I've never changed any of the settings. I hit enter. This, again, takes 3 to 5 minutes, depending on the show. Now, when that's done, I export it back out to WAV. Here is, to me, another piece of magic that I like to do. I use an actual command line application to do this. And the reason I do is when I used Audacity back in the day, when I first started this, if you picked Audacity to do a mono file, it would actually do what's called a stereo mono, which it would take my audio, mix it down to one track, but then duplicate the track in the left and right. The real reason I want mono is literally in every shape of the world, a word, half of the file size. Half the file size is great for people with bandwidth limits, great for people in slow connections. It's great for people in third world countries, and it's great for people who want to download massive amounts of podcast content. So I do it, and I don't hear a great degradation in quality at all. To me, one of the worst things a podcast can do is have two different hosts, one host in the right ear, one host in the left ear. I have outspokenly complained to podcasts that I've heard do that. It drives me absolutely nuts. Okay, now the lame command I run, now this is where you get Linux geeky on you, okay? Here's the command. It is lame -m -b -96 -double-resample -44.1 and then I have the input file space the output file. And the input file is a .wav. The output file is a file with the same name with .mp3. Okay. Here's what that command does. Lame is using the lame in encoder, which is basically the standard for MP3. I do believe iTunes uses a different encoder now, and it probably is superior in some shape, way, or fashion. But I don't have no stinking iTunes on any computer, so I can't use iTunes. So I use lame. Okay. The -m -m means output it in mono mode in true mono track, just one track. So it converts it to mono mode, but then it double reinforces it to go down to just do one track. The next one is -b -96. That's 96 bit rate. For spoken word, I personally believe 96 is perfectly fine. You have some quacks and weirdos and people that don't know nothing about podcasting, claiming they're professionals, or in fact, they are professionals, or even Hollywood types with their audio coming out in 256-bit, which makes it unbelievably, unnecessarily big. And I'm fine with them doing that because they lose listeners because of it. But I do 96 bit rate because for spoken word, it's just fine. Then it's the -resample 44.1. That's just the standard, I can't remember what it's called, but it isn't bit rate. It's another rate, frequency. 44.1 is the standard frequency of CDs and everything moving forward. And then it's just the input file, output file. This command, I like doing it because I literally see a timer, and a very accurate timer, by the way, showing me the process, what it's doing, how long it's going to take. This is another one of those things, about a minute and a half to maybe 3 minutes for the extremely, extremely long show. Then I have my MP3 file. That is the ending MP3 file. Okay. I then take that file and I open up EasyTag. EasyTag is my tagging application of choice. That's how I put in the show name, the network name, the show number, the image art, and all those things. I use EasyTag, and it's very easy. I always copy-paste things because it's less likely for any errors. So I go to the previous episode of the same show, copy it over to the new show, then just edit it. Now, once in a while, especially shows with close names like MRP and Mini, sometimes I use the wrong show, so once in a while an MRP show will come out with the mini information in the ID3 and vice versa. And then I name the file the same name as the old show, just one number different. For the oldest of the oldest players that are out there, like the old iPods or people running Roxbox, I literally just name the show. For instance, Android App Addicts is literally just AAA463.mp3. That, so if they load up the shows, they will always get it in the correct order. And I also always name every show with three numbers. Even if it's episode 1, in the file, it's 001 again. So if they download 100 plus shows, they're all going to be in the correct order. That's one of those little things that I do. And of course, once I go over 999 shows, there's going to be a problem, but I have a little bit of time before that happens. Okay, after using Easy Tag, I then use another old faithful, FileZilla. I'm using FileZilla because I'm using WordPress to host the website, and there is no uploader in the default WordPress, and my belief is you want to run WordPress as thin as possible with as few plugins as possible, and when there is plugins, you want to make sure they are updated. So to not be reliant on third-party developers that I don't end up paying, which most of them out there are just free plugins, I basically manually upload the file myself. And then I just go in. Again, I go into WordPress. I go into a older show of the same series. I clone it. And then I go in and just rename things, increment the file name, the path, the URL, and then we go and I hit publish. For a huge majority of the shows on the network, that entire process that I just described is typically at most 15 to 20 minutes. Once in a while, it can be 40 plus minutes when either one of the hosts accidentally has really bad audio, or I make a mistake in the process and I got to go back. Typically, it's easier just to go back further than I think, just to be sure that I'm going back to a clean spot and then proceeding after that. I'm going to try to do a video on this. I really want to do one soon. If I do, I'll make sure to mention it in the show, and it will be posted on the Patreon for all the Patreon people. And I'll try to tweet it out and stuff. And like I mentioned earlier, just to follow up, the 3D printer podcast is now officially here. It is called The Makers, THEMAKERZ, because, you know, it's Pod Nuts. We got to have a Z. There's only 2 episodes out now on the show, and I'm going to try to remember without looking at it. On the show, we have Liam Tidwell, longtime Pod Nuts people should remember him. He was on the show Nuts at Night. He's a computer entrepreneur, tech entrepreneur, lots of experience, lots of brain power, a very logical kind of guy that I get along with. He is definitely every bit of a 3D printing enthusiast to the extreme. He makes sure he knows his stuff, and he has a lot of fun doing his work. After that, I believe everybody else on the show is pretty much new to a Podnut show. We have Aaron in Oregon, really nice guy, met him a couple times. He has, I believe, 2 3D printers. Another smart guy with good experience with this stuff. After that, we have Brett, new guy, young guy. There's a lot of good things to look forward to in his life, because this guy has a lot of gumption to get things done. He's in California. Then we have Chad. Chad was a guy who used to be on Unbootables more than a couple times. A really nice guy from Dakotas. Unbelievably passionate about this stuff. He does similar kind of work for his 9-to-5, which honestly gives us a lot of insight to a lot of things. He also comes with a lot of intelligence because of that. After that, we have Jonas living in Hawaii. So we have a lot of time zones going on here, if you haven't noticed. So it's a little bit difficult to schedule this show with, but it's working out so far. Jonas, in his job, works on, I believe, 3D printers, CNC machines, and laser engravers. So he sees all kinds of stuff. Really passionate about the stuff. Then I believe, last but absolutely not least, we have Richard Hughes, Flying Rich, who's on the Linux Link Tech Show over at tilts.com, I believe. And he's also on the Mini PC Show. He's only had a 3D printer for maybe 6 months, but he definitely has that obsessive part about getting in, figuring it out, making it work right. Yeah, that should be everybody. And then there's me, the noob, the guy that knows nothing. Quick tangent. I'm a firm believer. Every podcast, if it just has experts on it, it turns into a like an ego contest, because everyone's always trying to outdo somebody else by how much they know. And to get really good, genuine garage talk, as I call it, is really hard to get. Even on Podnuts, when we have the experts on it and nobody else, they once in a while fall into talking about how much they know, how much they've done. But for the most part, they do stick with what I call garage talk, where it's just two normal guys talking about their day at work kind of thing. And I'm the guy that knows nothing. So I'm the guy that stops them and says, PLA, what's PLA? What's a hot end? What's the Z-axis? You know, and I just keep stopping them, and I keep asking them questions. So with each show, I'm learning, but I'm also hoping the listeners are learning as well. I'm having lots of fun doing it. Okay, random recommendation is going to be something I also mentioned earlier in the show, Run, Jump, Stomp. Bill over there has runjumpstomp.com. Again, YouTube channels, Twitch channels, all kinds of stuff. That's the actual site for his main podcast, I want to say. It's called We Play Games. He has a co-host on that show called Zap, Z-A-P-P. He's another guy really experienced at games, really good at talking about games. On that show, We Play Games, they talk about everything. Xbox, Scorpio, PS4, VR, PC games, DS, Vita, Switch, everything. And honestly, I don't care about most of those consoles. I only care about the Switch. But their back and forth banter, I think, is really good. I really enjoy listening to them, and honestly, I learn a thing or two. Really, I do. Really nice guy, really good content. I really encourage everyone, check them out. See if you like them. If you do, tell them that Door sent you over. Again, there's going to be a link in the notes for the boogie board sync and the boogie board video. I'm going to do the giveaway. In like a week, I got to get ready to go to Disney. So I'm not doing the giveaway right now. I got to wait till I get back, because I got to keep track of this and keep it organized. Make sure that every contestant entry is well recorded. And when I'm in Disney, I'm not going to have time to record anything. If you want to contact the show again, you can go to just send an email to ddg@podnuts.com. That's to send an email to the show. If you want to send an email to me personally, it's door2doorgeek@podnuts.com. If you want to support the network, you can go to podnuts.com. You can click on the PayPal link, and you can subscribe for $1 a month donation. Or you can go to patreon.com/podnuts, and that supports the entire network. We do our best to be an ad-free network. The only companies we serve ads for right now are literally what I consider friends of the network. I'm doing it as a favor to them because I believe in them. I believe in their product. I believe in their ethics. I believe in their morals. And I believe how they're helping people out. These, to me, are some of the best companies out there, with real people in charge of them, real people making them, real people giving them direction. So that's another great way to support the network. If you just go to podnuts.com, you'll see a couple ads on the webpage. If you listen to Podnuts show, we also have an ad sponsor on there right now. We have Ninja RMM. It's one of those remote monitoring and maintenance solutions that if you need, I encourage you to look at. If you don't need, then you don't need to go there. But it's a really good tool, really good people. And with that, I will talk to everyone as soon as possible.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.